perhaps you can help solve a mystery. Hello, fellows and lady fellows, boys and lady boys. It's the Stack Pack. What's up, guys? I'm David Howell, joined by Dan and Eli. As always, what's up, fellas?
Howdy, howdy.
Orale, cheers, fool.
Orale. We're covering season 5, episode 17 of the original true crime show, Unsolved Mysteries. Yeah, we got some shit to talk about. Have you guys been... it's been a while since we've done an episode. I kind of let our... exclusive interview with L. Sydney. I let it go a little bit longer so people would have a chance.
You'd let it simmer.
Mm-hmm. Marinade.
Yeah. That was really fun. somebody on Instagram was like, oh, you guys should have more people that acted in the show. And I was like, I don't know. I think that was like a one-off, like...
We got lucky.
Like, Dan was friends with coworkers, friends with him, so, yeah.
Yeah, we've tried to get other people. And we've reached out to some people.
Tommy Zeno won't even be on the Sons of Sam Netflix documentary. He's not going to be with us.
He doesn't want to do it. He deleted his Facebook, I think.
Well, we wouldn't stop harassing him, Eli.
I never stopped harassing him.
Exactly. You never stopped. Even after that restraining order, you just kept going.
You should have.
Send him mail. I sent him fingernail clippings. He still wasn't down.
Yeah. He wouldn't even detail your car.
I know.
He was
the nerve.
He was a witness. And he was like the guy who was like, that. You know, it wasn't David Berkowitz. So, you know, he's the guy that they should have had in that documentary. Maybe he's right. Just done talking about it.
No way was that he did not look 18 in that Unsolved Mysteries segment and in the Son of Sam. Didn't they use the footage from Unsolved Mysteries?
Yeah, they did. They used it. Yeah. yeah. So this first case is crazy. It's a final appeal and it's like a little mini, Making a Murderer. This shit's racist as fuck. This shit is so racist. The murder of this girl, and they just blame these dudes. They had no evidence against them.
Oh, yeah. It's totally – they just wanted to close the case. But you think it was based on race? You think they were Hispanic?
Well, I'll get into a couple reasons why I'm just like, come on. But, yeah, let's get into it. Final appeal.
February 25th, 1983.
What do you think? You think that'll match?
In Naperville, Illinois, a Chicago suburb, Chris Nicarico and her friends came home from school to a nightmarish discovery.
Oh my God, you guys!
Someone had broken into the house and her little sister Janine was missing. The police were called immediately.
What do we got, guys?
They found that the front door had been knocked in. A visible footprint remained on the door and two more prints were found in the yard. A sheet and a blanket were missing from one of the beds.
2 days later, they find... the body of the sister, Janine Nicarico, on a wilderness path less than 2 miles from the home, and she had been brutally raped and beaten to death.
Yeah, not pretty.
And yeah, and it's super sad, super tragic. And the people in jail didn't do it. By all accounts, didn't do it. It's a ridiculous story. 3 high-level law officials quit their positions because they believe that these dudes were innocent. So, you know, it's not just some, like, wild, you know, it's not like a Making a Murder thing. You know, these guys were...
There was no evidence whatsoever.
Like 120% innocent.
So much so... Well, let's talk about how they kind of were captured.
It all comes down to a $10,000 reward and a guy named Alex Hernandez, who was just a class A bullshitter, you know, just one of those guys. Everybody knows those guys. They just want to be part of everything. So they were there and they just want to spin a tale so they can get they can get props and they can get, you know, people think they're cool and in the know.
One of those guys, just spend 30 minutes at a shady used car dealership and then you will know one of those guys.
One of those guys.
Or just at a bar, you know, certain bar.
Didn't they also say that his IQ wasn't very high.
Yeah, he definitely wasn't bright. They don't say he had any mental illnesses, but you know, who's to say? But the point is a guy, this guy would, a compulsive liar, you know.
Yeah.
He just wanted to make stuff up, wanted to be cool. So that's Alex Hernandez. Crazy Alex, as they called him on the streets.
I mean, if that's not enough of a reason to kind of dismiss his claim, his name's Crazy Alex, for shit's sake.
Good old Crazy Alex.
You know his info's reliable.
He said that he heard people talking about the murder. They were like driving around and having some drinks and some smokes. And, you know, he heard the scuttlebutt.
Do you think they pulled like a, I don't know if our audience know this, but what I call a Benny, my dad is like the sweetest man you'll ever meet. He will tell you everything about every house in the neighborhood without you even asking. So like, did they like drive around and be like, oh yeah. So I mugged a guy there. Up this corner stabbed a dude.
I'll never forget.
Oh, in this driveway, I shot a guy.
Your dad's nonchalant stories are insane. Yeah. He came in one day and said one of his coworkers' wife died and that he found her on the floor. She was purple.
That's the entire story.
That was the story.
That was the entire story.
He left and we were just fucking mortified. She was purple. Okay.
Benny.
Thank you, Benny. Thanks for that. We were watching Modern Family. I was just here checking out the new Rugrats reboot, and then you had to come in and tell me about...
about a woman he found who was purple in the driveway. Like
the most wholesome thing that's in my queue.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Rugrats.
It's really good, guys. He said he heard people talking about the murder, blah, blah, blah. There was also this guy. Oh, fuck, what's his last name? I wrote it down. It says, I accidentally wrote Steve Buckle. That's not it. Steve.
Actually, that's his name. Stephen Buckle. I'm just kidding.
He's the heir to the Buckle clothes fortune.
Buckley.
Chunky shoes and thick belt buckles.
So apparently, these conversations with Alex, this guy bullshitting, led police to a guy named Steve Buckley. And he just happened to have the same kind of boots that broke down the door, and he looked like fucking living scum. But it doesn't mean he was.
You say living scum, you just mean he had a really thin, sketchy mustache.
He had beady eyes. Yeah. So they think Alex knows more, and he's not telling them. But of course he's full of shit, and the cops. I don't know. If they should know that he's full of shit. This is when they decide they're going to get another guy from the neighborhood, another criminal that's incarcerated, a guy named
Pinguino.
I know you wanted to say it.
Pinguino, which is my favorite Spanish word, by the way.
Does it just mean penguin?
Yeah, it just means penguin. It's penguin. It's penguin in Spanish.
Pinguino. Do you think he had like a funny waddle? Or
maybe. Maybe he was short, or maybe he always wore a tuxedo. Funny story, when Jaws and I were dating, we went to a store and there was a little toy penguin, like one of those wind-up ones, and I stole him and I gave it to her. Like, it was like really early on, and she kept it for a long time. We don't know where it is, but we named him Sabino the Pinguino.
That only drinks Sangrino.
Yeah, San Pellegrino.
Yeah, Pellegrino. Yeah, there you go. So they bring on... They bring in good old Pinguino, and they tell him to, like, say he murdered a child and just brag about it to Alex and see if Alex kind of returns the favor and brags about a child he murdered. And this kind of works. What a fucking creep. Like, oh, yeah, you killed – oh, I killed some kid, too. Like, what the fuck?
Dude, people are weird, man. They want to one-up. Doesn't matter what you're talking about. You could have told them I ate a Big Mac in 5 seconds, and the guy would have said,
dude,
I ate
one in 4 3.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. People are stupid.
It's like
man.
That Kristen Wiig, like, so, well, I ate it in 2, so, like, there you go. Like, mine's better.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so he goes in, and then he's like, and the guy who plays Pinguino is very animated and funny, like, his reenactment. And they're, like, acting out, like, stabbing children.
Ugh, oh, so yeah, they're just stabbing weird. Motions. It's terrible.
Yeah. And then he's like...
You never do that? You never just, like, you know, one stressful afternoon in your room pretend you're stabbing children?
Dude. And that guy, Alex...
You, that's not normal for you guys.
And Alex Hernandez is like, he's like, yeah, well, I was there when they killed that one girl. Like, I didn't kill her, but I like held her down.
Yeah, dude, what? Honestly, that is wretched human beings. Vile.
I know this guy has like a low IQ, but like, oh, dude, I don't know. Anyway, so the cops aren't done with his bullshit yet, and they drive him around town so he can tell them where the body is, and he's just like points everywhere.
Yeah,
and they're just
and nowhere. And the guy and the cop says, the detective says, we'd probably be still out there driving if we didn't run out of gas.
did you notice like the tone of voice he used when he made that comment? It wasn't so much Starkey. He was just like, actually, it probably would be true.
So obviously Alex is full of shit. He's fucking doesn't know anything, but the cops still follow up on his leads, and that leads them to Rolando Cruz, who's 19 years old, unemployed, living off food stamps. They question him and ask him if he knows Alex, and he's in the talking head. He's like, they asked me if I knew him, and I said, yeah, I mean, I'm not friends with him or anything, but I know of him. I see him around. Basically he got in on this thing. And so it started as Alex and Rolando are fucking feeding the cops all this bullshit fake information because they have like dollar signs in their eyes. They want this reward. And basically what that ends up making the cops do is just decide that it was them.
Yeah. Well, they, I don't think that they could come up with a story without implicating themselves. So they said that they knew what happened, but then the cops were like, well, how do you know what happened? And they had to say, well, I was there, but I didn't do it, thinking that they were going to still get reward money.
So March 8th of 84, Steve, Rolando, and Alex are all indicted on murder. And they all have to go on fucking trial. The cops immediately thought that they would roll on each other and somebody would start telling the truth, you know, who actually murdered, but none of them did because they didn't fucking do this.
Yeah.
That's when they say that one of the detectives in the division just fucking straight up resigned. He signed in his letter and he was just like, I'm out. Like, this is a sham.
And I love what he said on his way out. He said that he knew that the killer, the murderer of this little girl was still out there. And if the cops weren't looking for him, that nobody was looking for him. And he was still out running free. So he's like, I don't want to do this job anymore.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, stopped being a police officer and opened up a yarn store.
Is that what he did? Oh, I was like, I thought you looked him up and that's really what he did.
So January of 1985, the two are convicted of murder and sentenced to die. And Steve Buckley, the fucking white guy, gets a hung jury. And he just gets to go home. They just never fucking retry his case.
Nope.
Very odd compared to the later in the case. They get tried again because they were all tried together. So they get tried separately. And Alex gets a hung jury on his first case. And then they immediately retry it and he's guilty. So when the white guy gets a hung jury, it's fine. You know.
Yeah, they let him go. Okay, I see now why you said it was racist.
Yeah. I mean, all three of them are innocent, but they kept the Hispanic dudes in jail for
maybe,
like a decade.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, maybe could be. You're probably right, but I mean, we don't know. Maybe
More than a decade. I mean,
11 years is how long they were. Well, spoiler: 11 years was how long they were in jail.
Well, there's that. And should we move on to the update or
not quite yet? Because we got some other stuff to talk about.
So yeah, the white guy gets to go home, of course. So 6 months later. When these guys are on death row now, 7-year-old Melissa Ackerman is abducted in Illinois. Soon thereafter, a man named Brian Dugan is charged with that murder. And in order to not get the death penalty, he confessed to his crimes. And that included Melissa Ackerman, that included a 27-year-old woman, and that also included Janine Nicarico. They even, like, these guys weren't convinced, so they even like set up a questionnaire with like specific information to see, you know, try to catch him in a lie because they thought they had their guys. And out of like 50 details, like he got everything right.
Yeah, he got everything down to a T. The car he was driving, he told them exactly how he did it, the boots he was wearing.
Yeah, and what he says happened is that day he doesn't go to work. He smokes weed. He drives around the neighborhood, and then he knocks on the Nicarico door.
They even went as far as asking his supervisor whether he went in or not, and he said no, he didn't. He was definitely off work that day. He called in.
And they still didn't believe it. So he borrows a he asked the little girl to borrow a screwdriver, and she's like, "Sorry, no strangers." And then he just kicks in the door, bounds and gags her, and wraps her up in a sheet, takes her out, wipes the handle with the sheet.
Yeah.
And then he drives her to Illinois Prairie Path, where he rapes this little girl and beats her with a tire iron.
God, dude.
And then leaves her.
Fucking sickos, dude.
I know. It's fucking awful. I have goosebumps. And he does it again.
Dude, what a fuck.
I know. So frustrating. Trash guys corroborate his story because they see him leave. They even notice that he almost got stuck on his way out.
Oh, yeah. And he does say that, too. He says, I almost got stuck when I was doing a U-turn.
Oh.
Or backing out.
So they give him a polygraph. He does fine. He's not being untruthful. And they never charged him, and they never offered him a bargain for cooperating. And they just decided they have these two dudes in jail, even though they have all this evidence to the contrary. And they're just going to like, just because they don't want their organization, which isn't like a living, breathing thing. They don't want them to be embarrassed and admit that they were wrong. They're just going to keep these dudes in jail for no fucking reason.
It's fucked, pretty much, dude.
That's how you do it.
They just care about their career. They want the,
say the Q word. You know, you want to say
QAnon. They just care about Q.
No, their quota.
Oh, yeah. They do care about their quota. And they do care about their...
I've actually heard that is not a thing.
I heard it's not a thing, too. But I think their track record is probably more of a...
Yeah.
They don't want to be wrong. They want to be that detective, and they want to be a judge later. And they want to go into politics and, you know, get voted in positions and make more money because... cops don't make shit.
They give them, like I said, they give them a second trial after they know all the Dugan stuff because they were tried together. And so they give them two separate trials. The prosecution, basically their defense is trying to prove that Dugan was the guy who committed the crime. And he's the only one that did it. The fucking shitty prosecution, they decide that if Dugan did it, then these guys helped, which is ridiculous, even though there's no evidence or anything like that.
Whoa, there is evidence. There is evidence, not good evidence, but there's evidence. And that evidence is they found two other footprints near the dining room.
Oh, yeah.
But they don't tell the jury what type of footprints they are. Just two different types of footprints. We later find out that they're possibly women's size 6 or 7.
They were for sure women's shoes.
This is like. Like, come on, like, you're not going to give that
my wife vital is a petite
piece of detail to the jury.
No,
my wife is a petite female who is about 5 foot and her shoe size is 6. So, yeah, that's definitely not a man's shoe size.
Yeah, they knew that. Like, there's no way they didn't know that.
It's just slimy, It's just so slimy what they'll the depths that they'll go to just not be proven wrong.
Talk about slimy. What about this? One of the cops testified that Alex's cousin said that they were friends with Mr. Dugan. And then when they brought her on the stand, she said no. She denied every bit of it.
That's BS.
They literally just got a cop to lie on the stand just to put to say that they were friends with Dugan, which is so fucking stupid and insulting. Insulting, like, you don't think they can find this person and ask her? It's
sucks. So dumb.
But anyway, they get, both of them get they get convicted again and they get the death sentence. Months later after, that's when they figure out that the footprints are ladies' footprints. The jury never knows that. They just let these dudes rot because they don't want to admit they're wrong. And honestly, if I'm Rolando, man, I might... This is a joke. I want to preface before I say this, but I might fucking hate fucking Alex more than the person who actually committed the crimes.
Oh, yeah, that guy just lied. It's like, hey, why'd you Why'd you lie to get me in here, you asshole?
You guys just, you lied me into prison, you fucker. Like,
you dumb fuck.
You're a passing acquaintance. You're a passing acquaintance.
Yeah.
Like, that's how they made it seem. But yeah, I mean, obviously I'm joking. You know, Dugan's a despicable piece of garbage. So Alex and Rolando are found guilty of murder and kidnapping. Philip Gilman, a crime lab employee, left at that point. And then the assistant attorney general quit as well, saying that she did not want to be party to an execution of an innocent man.
Can we talk about that?
So all these things are loading up.
Yeah, they're all leaving.
The attorney general.
Assistant.
Or assistant attorney general resignation was like the ultimate Robert Stack mic drop. Like, it was the equivalent to modern days pulling out your cell phone and Googling the fucking answer as he pulls out the letter.
Inside his breast pocket.
Like, I mean, the only way that could have gotten better is if he, like, as he was making those comments, walked up to a fax machine as and that letter was coming like, out
hot.
Of the fax.
Well, it's still hot. Oh. You know, the paper's still hot when it comes from the printer, like, or the fax.
Your statement is coming in right now, actually.
The wet ink, you could smell the freshly pressed ink.
Yeah. The toner hasn't even set yet.
Yeah.
On February 1st, 1990, the jury returned its verdict.
The jury finds the defendant, Rolando Cruz, guilty of the offense of murder.
I couldn't understand it. I couldn't understand how anybody could have said guilty again. My first reaction was to look back behind me where my mother and my sister were sitting and to make sure that they were okay. And, you know, that's my main concern is my family. So I looked back at them and I just thought as well, gotta keep fighting these people. I mean, can't give up. After all these years, you don't give up.
They said that just prior to Rolando's execution, DNA evidence exonerated him, and they just completely let him go as if nothing had ever happened. What I'm really curious is because, like, Robert Stack at the end of the episode says, like, an innocent man might be executed next month.
Yeah, a month.
So, like, how close was it before that DNA evidence was, like, able to, like, rewrite the path of justice, in a sense?
Yeah.
So,
like,
yeah.
Was it, like, a week, 48 hours,
well, let's see.
Minutes?
1994, the conviction was overturned. New DNA excluded him and Alex. November 95, a judge acquitted them of murder. December of that year, Alex's conviction was overturned and he was released. In 2002, Rolando was pardoned by the Illinois governor. The new DNA test identified semen at the crime scene did belong to Dugan. Of course, we fucking know that.
Yeah, we knew that.
However, it was not until 2005 that he was actually charged with Janine's murder. He was convicted and sentenced to death on November 10th, 2009. However, the death penalty ended in 2011, and he was resentenced to life in prison. Man, if anybody deserves it, it's this guy. But
yeah, and on the wiki it says that initially he refused to plead in court and the judge entered a not guilty plea for him in 2006. When the trial reopened and then July 2009, that's when they actually entered a guilty plea for the rape and murder.
But by this time, the dudes had been out of jail for a while.
Yeah.
In all honesty, I hope that Rolando fucking sued the shit out of the police department and just like,
ooh,
what Unsolved Mysteries makes, like, makes it appear is just really sloppy police work.
Okay. So I do have something else. And this is kind of what I was saying was I didn't think that it was enough. I thought that he should have gotten the death penalty, but this is why he didn't. So apparently, in November 2009, he was sentenced to death by the vote of the jury, but and then in December of that same year, the judge set an execution date for February 2010. But after the death penalty was abolished in Illinois in 2011, by passage of the new law, Dugan's sentence was changed to life without the possibility of parole. But I don't understand, because that
Because it says he was supposed to get killed in 2010.
Yeah, they must have pushed the date back. So he made it by the skin of his teeth, man.
He probably filed an appeal like a month before his execution date to just kind of
push it.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know. I've had discussions about people with people about the death penalty.
I was going to say, if only his public defender had just, you know, forgotten to file that appeal.
Like,
I know a lot of people, a lot of true crime people are fully against the death penalty, but I don't know, man. I think there's certain cases, like, I don't know, man. Child murder. Like,
I feel like you 100% have to know that he didn't. Like, it's not a, there's no question. Oh, yeah, there's no doubt.
That I like that. That's a good rule too. Yeah. Like, there's got to be overwhelming evidence because
there's so, like, many cases.
So in this case,
there's no room for error.
Semen from a rape kit.
Yeah.
Video. Like, there's no room for error when you're literally taking someone's life.
Exactly. Like, I really think that people who are innocent, who have been put to death, didn't deserve it, but they obviously deserve to plead their case more.
I was so scared at the end of this case that this poor kid, Rolando, was
going to be too.
Was dead. Gonna have been, like, executed. Like,
yeah, no, me too.
Yeah, it was not a good feeling in my stomach watching him talk and being like, fuck. Because Dan was like, he got the death sentence, and I think he was thinking of Dugan. But yeah, because we tried watching this episode the other day and we both just completely fell asleep, like, boom, like, completely out. Like, we literally woke up.
It was at like 1:30 in the afternoon. It was really sad.
Yeah. That's amazing.
anyway, so there's an update about all those old folks. And then, I don't know. I honestly, I know we covered it and I just fast forward through it.
Oh, me too. I did the exact same thing.
I was like, I'm good. I don't even need a name. Like, we covered this good. And then the lost loves, there's a really sad lost loves about all these,
indigenous
white people, man. White people fucking it up for everyone.
White people fucking suck, dude. Jesus. Like, that's exactly what I said at the end when these siblings are reunited. And they're all just like
some people
and like rebooting their life. And I'm just like, fucking white people, man.
Dude, it's so funny because it's some people that don't know, David is 100% white.
Yeah.
And so hearing him say that, it's.
We think you have too many kids because you're a minority. So we're just going to take a bunch and scatter them across the country.
You're the minority that was here before us.
It's not even that. It's what's more fucked is that they weren't transparent in what they were doing. Like, clearly the first woman that they talked to thought she was going to get her kid back. She thought it was a temporary thing that they were going to take care of her kid.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden she didn't realize she was signing adoption papers.
It's like systematic oppression. Like the system making them uneducated and not preparing them for, like, being fucked over. You know,
they're not going to be able to provide. Hey, but no. So seriously,
it's not their fault. Nothing. None of it. It's awful.
No, but seriously, like, that system is just so that. And Robert Stack nailed it when he said that it was the heart was in the right place, but it was just very, like, it wasn't executed well. That whole system of. And even still now, our system's way broken. We have so many things that are, like,
I get
so
it's
wrong.
The 60s and 70s and stuff, but it's just like they're taking away these kids with, like, no opportunity for these parents to, like, get these kids back ever. Like,
no.
Oh, like, it's so awful.
Like, yeah, there's nothing. No halfway house. No, like, we're going to watch these kids for you until you can get back on your feet. Like, it's awful. It's 100% awful.
So they highlight a couple. But then they focus on this one family, and it's a really sad story. Like, you know, the parents were just unaware, and the I thought it was interesting the way the girl explained. She described how her dad kind of acted around all these people. You know, he just kind of nodded his head and just he just knew to just agree with these fucking, you know, white ladies in business suits and just, you know, like,
well, they think that they think that they know better, that they're, oh, we know what's better for your family.
And they're just like, well, we can't disagree because, I don't know. It breaks my heart to think that anybody could think of themselves as less than, you know, a second class citizen in any way. It's rough, but yeah, we're not going to get too much into that one. Let's talk about this murder of this old man.
On May 20th, 1991, the Henderson family of Washburn, Texas, gathered to bid farewell to one of its members. 66-year-old Bill Henderson, a retired banker, had been plagued by heart and lung problems for years. But the grief his family felt was compounded by anguish and anger. For Bill Henderson had not succumbed to illness. He had been murdered in his own bedroom.
I'm mad about what happened to my dad. I feel like he was cheated.
The story's really sad and very easily solved, but I think what's interesting is how they have such detailed account of this guy's day.
Or like last week, wasn't it? Because he went on like...
I think it was like 3 days.
A RV road trip or something like that?
No, he couldn't go on a road trip. The family went on a road trip. He, his health, if his health was better, which everybody take care of yourselves because you don't want to be left alone because you might die. No, his whole family had to leave. And because his health, he couldn't, the doctor said he couldn't leave his house. He had lung and heart problems.
Well, Paul, your health is ailing. The doctor says you might not make the vacation, so we're just going to leave you here all alone so you can die. It's been nice knowing you.
But I mean, in the family's defense, they did keep up with him every day. They said that they were talking to him every day. He was always keeping in constant contact.
By the way, which offspring gets the majority of the estate?
This is like fucking Knives Out.
Here, sign this will before we go.
Okay. That's the only reason why they were in touch with him every day. They was just like to make sure he'd like, is he dead yet? Nope. He answered, fuck.
Okay. You think they hired this guy? Conspiracy theory Dan over here.
Old man gets murdered. Very easily solved, but we have this crazy moment-to-moment detail. Let's get into it.
So, yeah, I looked up where Washburn is. Washburn is actually kind of closer to Amarillo.
His name is Bill Henderson. He had lung problems and heart problems, and yeah, like you said, but he was murdered. His wife, granddaughter, and great-granddaughter left to go visit relatives in Texas, so they were just leaving him alone, which was okay. And like Eli said, for three days he was keeping in touch with everybody, and then it was that day where there was nothing, no reply, and his son tried reaching him, and you know, started getting worried that he might have had a heart attack or had a fall or something, you know, because he was elderly and living by himself. So Bill goes to investigate, and he notices first of all that the truck's gone. When he gets inside, the phone's off the hook. He goes and checks the rest of the house and the other phones when he sees broken glasses in the hallway, his dad's glasses. And then he sees a broken picture in a frame in the hallway. And then he walks into the room, and that's when he finds his dad, quote, all tore up. Which is really sad, dude. This man's just like, my daddy didn't deserve this. And he's, you know, he's got a glorious mullet. He kind of looks like Conan O'Brien's mom.
A little bit.
Yeah. He's a special kind of white. But yeah, he's, it's really sad, man. And he just talks about like, you know, that happening to his dad. The last thing his dad ever seeing is just awful. He also says that he was cold. So he knows he had been there for a while. And, the son or whoever was with him was like, yeah, he was murdered. That definitely was not a heart attack. And, it turns out that he was strangled and beaten to death. And, there was evidence of him fighting for his life. The only thing that was missing was a wallet in his truck. A detail I missed the first time around was that a man just found it on the side of a highway, right?
Yeah, he found it.
Cut to two hitchhikers and a creepy man walking into a gas station 265 miles away from Washburn. And this gas station was a truck stop near Oklahoma City. As soon as they get in and split off with the driver, these two other guys who turned out to be hitchhikers go up to the employee and say they're extremely nervous, quote, and they say that the truck they're in is stolen. And I want to get those deets. Like, how do they decide? You know, how'd they figure out that the truck was stolen?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know how they know, but they know. And the guy in the reenactment is creepy looking. The driver, he uses the phone and he uses the restroom. And then, while he's using the restroom, the employee calls the cops and the cops say the car isn't stolen. They're like, the hitchhiker's like, what? Like, it's gotta be. It makes no sense.
It's gotta be stolen. Yeah.
So they get their stuff from this guy's car and he kind of goes on, without them. They're like, yeah, we're good. But the problem is they, by the time these hitchhikers were calling, they even called 911 themselves. But by the time the hitchhikers were calling, Mr. Henderson's body hadn't been found. So there was, you know, the car hadn't been reported missing or anything. Which is like, you should still look into it. If someone says a car is stolen, you know?
Yeah, they should definitely like...
go check on that guy.
No, no. Our register says it's not. The guy hasn't reported it stolen, so it's not stolen.
You mean a 30-something-year-old is driving a vehicle registered to a 66-year-old man and the license, the driver's license
miles away?
Photo does not match the guy?
Last
yeah,
names
it's not stolen. It's not.
Last names don't match? Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey,
people were little lazier back then.
Yeah. Because he's going across state lines, you know, it's like, this is getting confusing, boys. Let's just, you know, let's just go home. Let's just go to the Cracker Barrel. apparently they decided that he would have needed to stop once more for gas before getting to Hazelcrest, Illinois, which is where the truck was abandoned. And the only piece of evidence they have from the crime scene is a bloody palm print. And that's how they end this segment when it was originally unsolved.
Ooh. And I have the update.
Spit it.
It's pretty juicy.
Yeah, you ready to buckle up? Because holy shit, it's convoluted.
Yeah. So the two hitchhikers that were anonymous came forward. Turns out they were cousins. They came forward and contacted the telecenter for Unsolved Mysteries. And soon after, they went under hypnosis in hopes of identifying the killer. So the update we get from Unsolved Mysteries says that because of the hypnosis is the reason they found this guy, which yeah. is yes and no. So,
well, hypnosis works. I mean, it's not like a magical thing. It's just like them getting more detail, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the way I'm understanding it.
Absolutely. I agree with you. But there's more to it. So apparently they were able to find out the killer's hometown using hypnosis.
And his name, right?
They didn't get his name, but they said the wiki says that they were unable to give information to identify the suspect. So they actually don't attribute the finding of this guy Lawrence to the cousins. What they actually did find was in 2005, the police reopened the case. Yeah, the two cousins who came forward, the hitchhikers.
I didn't know they were cousins.
Well, yeah, I said they were cousins.
Oh.
I said it turns out they were cousins. So in 2005, the police reopened the case, and they located a witness who had been overlooked in the initial investigation. Initially, they also thought, I don't know why, but the investigators thought that the call that he made while they were in that gas station, they thought he called a shelter, but I guess they were able to pull phone records because it turns out he didn't call a shelter. He called a residence. So they were able to backtrack and find out who he called. That person then told them that it was their roommate that called them. And the roommate lived with them in 1991.
They were able to get the phone records all those years later?
I guess so. I don't. It's unbelievable to me.
Or maybe
but
they still had them.
So the roommate claimed that she had received the call from the suspect and that she said that his first name was Larry and that he lived in a town near a lake in New York that she's like, I know it was funny and sounded, it was started with an S. So believe it or not, because of that information, they found out that he was from Skaneateles, New York. And they were able to find out that his funny. Real name was Lawrence W. Larry Tutt.
His name was Larry?
Well, they called him Larry. His name was Lawrence. So he was a transient and he was a known criminal who had actually already been in custody.
I thought you said, like, sorry, all I heard was Lawrence W. Larry. And I was like, is he telling me his name is Larry?
No, in quotations, Larry. So he was a transient, he was a known criminal, and he was actually already in custody on an escape charge. And well, they pulled his DNA and the evidence, and also his palm print, which obviously connected him to the crime scene. So in 2006, he was indicted for Bill's murder. And in November of 2007, he pleaded guilty. But he was sentenced to 45 years in prison, but he was already serving time in New York for a 1998 arson and another murder of a guy named William Freetag. So apparently William and Tut were close friends. William died in a fire and destroyed that home. Initially, it was ruled an accident, but Tut was at the home when the fire started and told several different stories about what had happened. And yeah, he was convicted of his murder. They found a bunch of paperwork which stated that he had been arrested on drug charges in New Mexico. This guy had a rap sheet, man, that went on for days. Yeah, even like if you look, the composite sketch of the suspect even kind of looks really, really similar to Lawrence. So, AKA Larry.
Larry.
The reason they actually kind of got him on this arson charge was kind of the same thing that goes, you know, that all circles back. They kind of did the same thing to this guy that they did in the first case, where he confessed to a cellmate that he burned this other guy alive.
Why would he fucking tell? Why would he? Pick up hitchhikers?
Because he didn't care.
Just fucking murdered a guy. He's stupid.
Well, he might have picked up the hitchhikers as possible other victims. Because apparently the dude that he killed in the
arson
stole his identity. Because when they looked up, yeah. So like the New Mexico drug charges, it's a photo.
It's
of
under
him,
the other guy's
but
name.
It's not hit. It's not oh, Larry no Tut. Way. It's under William's name.
Damn, that sucks.
So, and he said he suspected to be a possible serial killer.
Yeah, he could be.
Just because he's just so vague. Like, I guess he doesn't give him a lot of info. But he kind of has an interesting sentence. So, like, he just finished. Give me a second. I got to.
Yeah, he, like, just finished the drug charge. And then he got hit with the arson and murder of the William guy. Yeah.
So, in 2014, he completed his escape charge for Ohio State.
Oh, I forgot about the escape charge, too.
But he is now serving.
Escape?
Yeah. They don't say for what it's for. So now he's serving a 25-year sentence in the state of New York. And then once he's done with that sentence, they're going to ship his ass
to Texas
for 45 years. So he's like doing a fucking prison tour like across the U.S.
I plan on seeing every prison. I want to tell you which one
what
says.
What a piece of shit. Oh, God. 25 years, finally. Now you're going to Texas for 45.
Yeah.
I wonder if he missed Texas.
He probably missed that Cracker Barrel.
Oh yeah, he definitely missed the Cracker Barrel.
Their country store.
Or the weird game with the golf tees.
Chicken and dumplings.
Yeah. Well, anyway, yeah. This is fun. Those are two interesting cases, and we skipped some lost loves.
Some sadness.
Apparently,
well,
this was like
it's all sad.
Yeah, it is all sad.
A special episode, because at the end of the episode, they say the very next day that they're going to do another Unsolved Mysteries episode, and this one is actually really like supernatural, I'll say.
Is this the one about the kid that makes it rain?
Dude, Rain Boy.
Yeah, Rain Boy.
We were watching it while we were eating.
And not the way Lil Wayne used to do it.
Dude.
You got a plumbing problem.
Yeah, I don't think that sound you made, that gesture you made with your hands is going to translate sound-wise.
It just sounded dirty.
Yeah. Yeah, Rain Boy, man, that shit's interesting. Watching it. I was like, damn, I wish we were talking about this today. But we'll be back next week with Rain Boy. I think they called him Rain Boy.
I don't know. We're going to call him Rain Boy.
I like that name.
Not Rain Man. He's Rain Boy.
Yeah. So, yeah, hang out with us next week, guys. Thank you for listening to us. If you know anybody who's been in an episode of Unsolved Mysteries, please tell them to contact us or we'll contact them.
Don't have your people call my people.
Yeah, or maybe we'll just have L on again, and he can just help us with another crime because he's pretty fun.
Dude, he was great.
he seemed like he had a lot of fun. I don't know. But anyway, for every mystery, there's someone somewhere who knows the truth. Perhaps that someone is listening, and perhaps that someone is you.
Good night.